there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the near post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. We're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network on the
Con Stamatakos is going to review the year for us. We're going to look at the Socceroos and all the big issues. How are you, Con?
I'm pretty good, Eamon. How are you?
Good, and it's been a 2010. It's been a fantastic year for football, would you say, Con, or not?
I think 2010 for a football fan is probably the lowest moment ever. Personally,
the lowest moment ever. Well, we're going to look at that. You can catch this podcast on the blog Near Post, www.nearpost.blogspot.com. Of course, we're available on halftimeheroes.com.au, and you can get the latest edition of Halftime Heroes out in December on that site. And also, you can catch the podcast on iTunes. So, we're going to get right into it with Con. The lowest point in a long time in Australian football. Not only that, Con says it's the lowest point ever. Why, Con? We've had some bad moments in the past when we haven't had any football at all. We've had the NSL in its darkest days. We've been to World Cups. We've won the Asian Cups. The A-League is into its sixth year, and you say it's the worst year ever. Come on, Connie. Why?
I'll give you two reasons why. The first reason, the World Cup debacle. And I'm not talking about the Australian point of view, but just on a whole, just the fact that the cheating, the ball, the dodgy ball that they used in the World Cup, and also just the negative play. And when you tie that into the World Cup bid decision going to Russia and Qatar, it's just, I think football is just, it's just an ugly thing at the moment. I know this is a very negative view, but it's just the way that I'm looking at it. The things that that FIFA preach about fair play and changing the world and all that sort of stuff, I think just this year it's just been thrown out the window.
I think you're probably right, Con. I think they do have a big spin with fair play, and of course they are a massive business organisation. But I guess it started perhaps for me with Thierry Henry and his handball goal, which of course got France to the World Cup, and of course they imploded once they got there. But I think, you know, any individual game can be decided by a bit of fraudulent play, if you like. But Thierry Henry, and with the use of TV these days, I mean, that kind of set a whole tone. Of course, at the time, it was a one-off. It caused a world stir, but it was a negative. And then, as you say, we moved on to the World Cup itself. And I don't know whether the World Cup itself was so negative. I thought, you know, Spain particularly, Germany, quite attacking sides. But then throw it in at the other end of the coin with the World Cup bids and the whole process. I mean, that was just a total farce.
I think people are not so naive anymore about what FIFA are looking at trying to achieve, and it's not football for the people. I'll tell you that much.
No, well, I mean, okay, just to play devil's advocate, or maybe, football for the people. There hasn't been many World Cups, certainly up until about when we went to Japan and Korea, possibly. Up until then, it had been mainly Europe and then back to South America with the USA thrown in between. So until they went probably to America itself in 94, you know, there hadn't been a World Cup outside Europe or South America. So, you know, you could argue that over the last 20 years or so, and looking ahead to the next few years, the World Cup has been taken to places it's never been before. It's going to go to Russia. Okay, do we like the process and how it got there? Maybe not. But it's been taken to a new place, and they obviously do things a little bit differently.
But that's FIFA's saying that. I mean, just because you haven't been somewhere before doesn't mean it's a good place to go.
Well, no, that's true. It doesn't mean it is. But then on the other...
Just because I haven't been to Canberra before doesn't mean I want to go there, Eamon.
Don't worry, mate. You're not alone there. You and Ben Buckley, eh? You and Ben Buckley don't want to come to Canberra. We know all about you lot. Now, okay.
I've been in Canberra.
So let's have a little chat then about the Socceroos. You know, we've had a change of coach. We've had 2010 was, I guess, kind of what many football fans knew. We weren't quite good enough to build on the back of 2006. Pimverbeek, of course, a lot of people had problems with his style, and we came out of that with a new coach. But Con, what are your thoughts about what happened to the Socceroos in 2011 and where we are
Oh, in 2010, you mean?
Sorry, 2010, and where we are heading at the end of 2010.
Going forward, as the redhead likes to say.
Moving forward.
Moving forward. I think it all came crumbling down when the Socceroo jersey was shown. That's when it all went downhill. The Harry Kuehl fighting with the media as well.
You might have rephrased it. I'd put Mike Cockerell fighting with Harry Kuehl.
I thought that was spectacular. Like, the off-field action was spectacular.
It was, but it was.
The on-field action was very boring.
Well, come the World Cup, it was pretty spectacular.
Well, I'm talking about the Socceroos leading. It was almost like the Socceroos just waited to... they only started playing once they played Ghana. It was almost like every game prior to that, they were holding themselves back, and then once they got to Germany, they shit themselves, and then that's when they realised, shit, we've got to start to play now.
Yeah, and I think maybe for...
I'm being very critical, but the Socceroos games, the qualifiers, many times they only had a few days to prepare. A lot of the time was taken up by sponsorship. They had to sponsorship arrangements and all that sort of stuff, Eamon.
So, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I spent a couple of months interviewing Socceroos and going to press conferences and stuff, and just the amount of stuff they did with sponsors, and they've only got a certain amount of time they can play together. So also when they were playing in Asian countries, they only had a few days to prepare. So the World Cup was very disappointing because we thought we were going to see the real Socceroos, and then Tim Cahill gets sent off. Verbeek just loses it with his team selection, and we only got revved up against Ghana, and then the worst thing happened. Kuehl gets a handball on the line, and then that's there goes the World Cup. And then to make it even worse, Brett Holman is the hero.
Brett Holman. Well, he was probably a highlight of 2010.
That's how just weird this year has been for football in Australia, that Brett Holman can hold his head up high and still, such is the hate that we still don't even think he's a good player.
Well, I do. I've always rated him. I've always thought that he's a good player. I just think he's been, you know, I think he's one of the guys that... he's mobile, he's quick, he gets opportunities, and in the World Cup he showed he can score, and it looks like he might be looking for a bigger move to a bigger club. So at 25, 26, you know, he's continuing to progress. I would say Brett Holman is the shining light of all the young players that have come through since 2006. If we had a few more who were playing in the Dutch division week in, week out, and, you know, knocking on the Socceroos' door like he is, we'd actually have a better team. But, you know, the sad thing perhaps, Con, is that, you know, Brett is the best of them.
But that says it all, Eamon.
Yeah.
If Brett Holman is our shining light, that says it all.
So we're in a hole now.
I still think, going back to the World Cup, it's just what ifs. You know what I mean? With the World Cup before that, against Italy, it's what ifs as well.
Well, I think these one-off tournaments, I mean, I'm sure every team around the world who didn't win it, you know, from Holland with Ian Robin, who basically lost the World Cup for Holland as he went through. You know, I mean, I'm sure England, you know, you think of any team there, Con, and I'm sure they all got their own sort of post-mortem saying, what if, because that's the nature of the tournament. If you don't, you know, it's such a short thing, and if you don't achieve in each of the games you play, really, it is, you know, you're struggling. Of course, Australia started so badly against Germany that it kind of left it out before we'd even got there, sort of thing.
But do you think that Australia was pitied more than any other country? Like, the world would have pitied Australia after what happened to us?
No, I don't think so.
You think we were just as equally screwed? Everyone was equally screwed.
I think you make your own luck in these things, and I think you also, you know, the best teams tend to do the best at the World Cups, and I think Australia showed what we were. You know, against Germany, we were probably tactically naive and didn't have the individual players and maybe the coach who, you know, could take the game at least or get a point against Germany. You know, we had some slow aging defenders and some not so able midfielders, you know, and I think that showed. And, you know, often, you know, we perhaps produced our best performances in the second and third game, which, of course, is often the way when, you know, you go in with your normal team like Craig Moore, Vinnie Grella, what have you, and of course, Vinnie Grella didn't last the tournament. And then you find, oh, maybe Carl Valeri is a better guy to have here younger guy, faster, you know. But I mean, who was going to drop Greller in the first game? So I think you sort of make your own look in these things. I mean, it's, you know, if you look at England, the same, they go and Wayne Rooney didn't perform, you know, maybe they shouldn't have played Wayne Rooney, but, you know, who's going to drop Wayne Rooney, you know? You sort of think teams that prepared well, Germany, Spain, and the eventual winners, of course, and Holland as well, you know, teams that prepared well had in-depth, lots of players were fresh, lots of players to choose from. When somebody got sent off or got an injury, they can, you know, the guy from Torres gets injured and Villa comes in. Well, you know, just the quality of the replacement, whereas Australia just don't have that. And I think, you know,
the thing is just how far Ghana went.
Well, that's right. And
we outplayed Ghana with 10 men.
And it was the same at the last World Cup. We lost to Italy, you know, on that penalty. If we'd have beat them, we would have played Ukraine. We could have possibly got to the semi-final, you know. It is very much a what-ifs, isn't it, as you say?
Well, yeah. It's,
you know.
But that's what makes it so amazing, that tournament.
Well, that's right, and I think
margins and
I think it was the first game, Conley. If you look back at the first game for Australia, was really so big and so demoralising a defeat that it kind of set the whole tone for our campaign that we were always playing catch up.
Everything was demoralising, and looking back, everything was also just the irony was just, and the things like Craig Foster saying we're gonna win. I got a feeling right before the game, and then afterwards saying that. That was the worst display ever, and that former Australian coaches should be in the dressing room analysing the team sheet.
Yeah, Fozzie didn't know. Okay, well, we might talk about. But I guess he is the number one football commentator in the country. And
I just thought the pre-game, after-game sort of analysis show was just as embarrassing.
I think Fozzie. Look, I think I really like Fozzie. I think he does fantastic things for the game.
I like Fozzie as well. But,
I think when
it pull that out though, Eamon. When someone says stupid things like that and does stupid things and he's supposed to be the chief analyst and says things like that, you got to call that person out, and that's going to remain forever.
Well, I think you're right, Con. I think cometh the hour, cometh the man, and Fozzie has shown in times of great need. He's got, like at the Uruguay game, I mean, he was never allowed to call another game after the Uruguay game because of his emotional involvement, and the same with the things that he said after the Socceroos game, they were just absolutely pathetic, weren't they? That, you know, we must have former captains in the dressing room and this sort of stuff. And
the only thing that was missing was him crying while he was saying that.
That's right.
If only he cried.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that maybe could have saved him or made it even funnier, is just him crying and Liz Murray giving him tissues. And
in fairness, though, Connie, he puts his heart out there, and I guess at times, you know, for Fozzie, the World Cup, the Socceroos, Australian football, it's such a big deal for him that when they did get hammered like they did, you know, he's perhaps in an emotional place that you know, he's in front of the camera and he says things, as we all do, that we perhaps wish we hadn't said. But yeah.
I think he believes that, though.
I know. It is a bit...
He said it. He hasn't come out and retracted that comment. He really thinks ex-Australian captains should be in the dressing room analysing the team sheet and then having a little vote beforehand, like Australian Idol or something, and then they decide, you know, who's going to be in the team and what formation. I just think he really wants that to happen.
It is the most ridiculous idea I've ever heard from somebody. And Fozzie does have a lot of fantastic ideas about football, boy. I mean, you'd have to think that is one of...
That was gold. And it wasn't just football people that heard that idea as well. It was all of Australia that was privy to that kind of...
That idea to me, Con, is like an Australian Peter Fitzsimons or Rebecca Wilson saying, this is how we should run the team.
Yeah.
Having no clue about how you run football teams. But so Fozzie, he hasn't had a... He's had a good year. He's got out there. We've heard a bit about him. So
sort of one of his rivals, Mike Cockerill, has probably the biggest year in terms of the bitch fest.
I think Cockerill's come a little bit ahead of Fozzie this year. He's certainly, you know, taking on Harry Kewell. That was a notable achievement.
And Slater, don't forget Slater. Like Robbie Slater and Michael Cockerill are like the bullies that don't have any sort of, you know, their talent's fading, and they see the young person, sort of getting ahead of them, and they just bullied Harry Kewell. Those two, that was their job, and they thought by doing that, they were going to help Australian football somehow, but...
Well, it's a little bit like the paparazzi getting Lady Di. You know, you thought on a, it's kind of like you pick on
the tunnel. Yeah, they chase Harry in the tunnel.
You pick on Harry and you think, well, okay, this will get a story.
Yeah.
And it's an easy target. And Harry responds or doesn't. And in this case, he did respond with the Robbie Slater interview. I mean, that was one of the most excruciating bits of TV.
That was painful to watch and listen to.
Yeah, I mean, Robbie doesn't really do himself a great favour. In fact, you know, I think Robbie feels a bit pushed aside by Bozza. Mark Bozza has come on the side on the onto the Fox TV studios recently, and I think Bozza's feeling that he's not the number one anymore as the second commentator, which, I mean, is, you know, I think most of us would agree is probably where he lies, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think the Bozza and Robbie Slater show is very difficult to watch sometimes.
Painful. Yes, I agree. Now, okay, so
they're a comedy act, they're a football act, and they don't really play football anymore, so...
No, and they're not really that funny. Although I think Bozza's analysis is pretty good, although I think Robbie ends up...
Bozza's great.
I think Robbie ends up...
excellent.
They've probably got two similar sort of guys. Bozza's probably a better match and game analyzer than Robbie, and of course they're trying to do the same thing, and Robbie probably doesn't need to be there. They need to have someone...
There's a lot of dad jokes.
A lot of dad jokes, yes.
Jokes your dad would say.
Yes, that's right. So I think, I think Mel McLaughlin and Adam Peacock do pretty well to be in the same studio with those two, because it kind of gets a bit tiresome, doesn't it? Now, moving away from the commentary side of the game, Connie, what what about, you've got thoughts, I know, on the best CEO of the year. Who is he?
Oh, so we're going to club football now? We're doing the best of times, worst of times.
Yeah, that's right. The best of times, worst of times.
All right. So yeah, well, best CEO has to go to Edwin. Edwin looked with a silent J, or sort of a silent J, or G. Sorry. Basically, he's been whinging ever since Sydney's season started just going downhill. The first was. He blamed the... there was a lot of derision when a lot of experienced players went, and the players that have replaced him haven't done as well. And Edwin looked... someone asked him if that was his... what the story was there, and he basically said it wasn't his fault. It was the coach who... it was a technical decision that was made. And then also a couple of weeks earlier, blaming high wages. So I just think, especially from someone who's coming from a football background, and everyone always cries about we need football people, but even with someone like football, just because you're a football person doesn't mean you're not going to say stupid things.
No, that's true. And I think, it is interesting that, I mean, all the, it's a big issue that's come across this year, particularly at the end of the year with the crowds dropping. You know, are the clubs paying too much?
I agree with him, though. But I just think he shouldn't be saying that stuff, especially when your team's about to play a game.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
he's just belittling the player. It's sort of like a backhanded, not a backhanded compliment, but just underarmed attack on the players.
Yeah, that's
those
right.
Stuff. Like, I'm not to blame. But what's to blame is the fact that we're paying these wages and the fact that we bought the wrong players. Don't say that out loud. Keep it in the boardroom.
No, that's right. I'll just ask you your thoughts there, Con. So on the A-League salary, I mean, they're talking about us paying more than the MLS, the American League, who are getting probably two, three times our crowds at times. You know, we're obviously paying a lot of money. The FFA put $9 million into Townsville. So, do you think that perhaps we have overpaid? When we started the league, we started with $6 million or whatever we needed to get in there, $2.5 million salary cap. Have we started with too much money, given that the revenues coming in clearly haven't matched it?
Well, it's funny now, all of a sudden everyone's saying that the wages are high because Frank Lowy says he doesn't want to give any more money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Frank Lowy said, no, I'm not giving any more money. So all of a sudden, clubs are just thinking, shit, how are we gonna pay our bills? How are we going to stay alive? When the A-League first came, the wage increase from what the NSL was to how they increased the wages from what the NSL was to when the A-League started, it was a big rise in pay.
Yeah, and also the fact that they did get paid, because often a lot of players didn't get paid.
Yeah, just the fact that they did get paid means there was a big rise in pay.
Yeah, that's right.
For half the clubs. So, yeah. And this was supposed to bring in... The A-League was supposed to, like, a new era of professionalism. We're going to play the players... We're going to pay the players this much. This will mean new kids that will stop going to other sports and think that they can make a good living... compared to NRL and AFL, they'll make a living on par. But at the same time, I just think there's been a lot of overspending, a lot of the wages, as I said, compared to the NSL, there was a huge pay rise. We tried to bring all these players back, get some quality imports, but all of a sudden, no one, Frank Lowy says he's not going to pay anymore, and we can't afford it.
Well, it does make you wonder, Colin.
No, we can't afford it because we haven't got a television deal that underwrites all these payments either. So
Tony Sage, Nathan Tinkler, Colin Constantine and Clive Palmer, Frank Lowy, they've put in millions into the game. And you think, well, if we aren't, and that was when it's been relatively successful in the first three years when the crowds were quite good. If the next 5 years are perhaps not quite as good in terms of crowds as the first 5 or 6 years, you know, who are going to put in the millions to sustain the game? And also, you know, once one or two of these guys, say Palmer, Tinkler, Lowy or Sade, say I've done enough, there won't be, I can't believe there's going to be somebody else with their pockets who are going to come along. So I just think we've wasted a heck of a lot of money.
They are too, and also it's very strange the way the licenses, like 1 year extensions, 5 years. Who talks about these things when they talk about other overseas clubs? I know it's a new league and all that sort of stuff, but it just disheartens you. If you're playing for the Fury or you're playing against the Fury, they might not even be there next year.
No, that's right.
It's like ghosts. Ghosts are on the field. Football player, there's ghosts playing. There's a ghost team.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes left on the near post wrap with Colin Stamatakos, who's a Halftime Heroes editor, and we're talking about the review of 2010. I want to leave the last few minutes, Colin, just to talk about the Socceroos and going forward, moving forward. We're all looking forward. We've got the Asia Cup coming up in a week or two's time. Colin, you know, we've got a few minutes left. What are your thoughts on the Socceroos? We've got 50 players named. You know, where are we at in terms of potential? Any more room for optimism?
Well, I thought that was... The 50-player squad was interesting. It was almost like a WikiLeaks, but the AFC leaked it.
You weren't on it. I was stunned. We were the only two left off.
I know. I think I saw my middle name there somewhere.
I think possibly. Ersun Gulam, he was on it.
Yeah, well, I think that's very hilarious that his name was on it too. It was almost like there was an outcry how we let him go. He didn't get to didn't play for Turkey, and then all of a sudden it's almost like, okay, we'll put him in the squad. Osijek was like, who is Gulam? He's done nothing. And then 2 weeks later, it's reported that he spoke to him, asking him to come and play. So it's reactive actions.
Yeah, it makes you think.
Proactive actions.
Makes you think. Not just
him. Going back on the squad, I hope Harry Kuehl. This could be a really good... because the tournament's played in January, I think you're not going to see the players as exhausted as the end of the year in some other tournaments.
No, that's true. And most of the other players...
Hopefully they are fitter. Hopefully there's... it's a shame that Lecky and Kantorowski are injured. I would have liked to have seen them try and make the squad, but, yeah.
You'd like to see one or two guys... If there's 23 players in the squad, you'd like to see one or two, like, I suppose, Tomiyor or Lecky or Kantorowski.
Yeah.
Just some of those guys, at least in the squad, so they're starting to push for places.
Yeah, but, yeah, some of those players like that, that, OK, you're not going to start them, but it just give them some experience and some excitement off the bench. So, but, you know what, after the World Cup, I don't even want to think about what's going to happen, Eamon. The last Asian Cup we were talking about, we're going to win it. We're starting to do the same, especially since Qatar won the World Cup bid, sort of almost like a revenge.
Yeah.
To show how dare they not pick us for the World Cup.
I mean, I can't see Australia winning the Asian Cup.
I don't see them winning it either. No. I'm always optimistic that, you know, I'm optimistic that the Socceroos are going to put in a good performance. But I don't know, especially the last couple of performances with Osijek, especially against Egypt. That was just, if it's going to be like that, then...
Well, I think it could be. I mean, I know Egypt are a good team, but I think there's a fair few teams in Asia who have got a bit of flair, got a lot of pace, and I think, you know, we could struggle a little bit. But, you know, on the other hand, you sort of think, well, I don't think it's going to be beautiful football from Australia, but I think, you know, we should be competitive in every game, which people will be shocked to hear us say, oh, we should be competitive. But I think that's as good as we are at the moment. You know, we're competitive.
We should get out of the group. I mean, India is our first game. We should... give them double. We could even go double figures with them.
Don't say it, Connie. Don't say.
and
South Korea and Bahrain. But you know,
I'd be surprised if some of the Indian players don't run with cricket pads on.
Well, we, Connie, you're talking like an Australian, not like a guy who knows that 110,000 people watch the Calcutta Derby.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, you knew that, Connie. You were joking. You were teasing me.
It's the end of the year,
I mean, you were just messing with me. But no, I think South Korea, I can't see us getting it. I can't see us beating South Korea, given how
that would be a great. That'll be a very good game to watch. And is it Bahrain, the other one?
Yeah, Bahrain now.
Bahrain. Yeah. And we've beaten them before, so. But again.
But it's 50-50, Con. I reckon the Bahrain Aussie game, I mean, I don't see that as. You'd think we'd beat India. South Korea, you'd think we'd deal with this probably comfortably.
I fear South Korea more than any other team because South Korea have got a history of beating us.
And they've also got, you know, some very strong players, of course. They did well at the World Cup, didn't they?
What's that?
They did well at the World Cup as well.
Yeah, they went through. I'm pretty sure they went through.
Yeah, they did. So I think, it could be a rough trot ahead. So, but it looks like he's going to... Well, I guess he's picking a team to win it. And, you know, people can say, oh, we should play the youth. But we don't have any youth who are really anywhere near ready to take on the whole team. We need the Harrys and the Timmys and all those guys. So you've got a few seconds left, Connie, with a prediction perhaps for the Asian Cup, this side of the tournament?
Probably losing to Japan in a semi-final. In a quarter-final maybe.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair call. Quarter-final, semi-final. You'd think last time we lost in the quarters, this time you'd like to think we'd perhaps with a not quite so good team.
What I would love, Eamon, is playing Qatar.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't you just love that in the final? Packed stadium... And we beat them. And it'll be scant revenge, but revenge is good revenge.
We like that sort of revenge, and we'd like to see Mohammed bin Hamman presenting the cup to the captain of the Socceroos.
Exactly. Mohammed bin Hamman presenting the cup to Lucas Neal, and Lucas Neal getting on there and said, we should have got the World Cup. I would love to see that.
He could take off his T-shirt, and underneath the T-shirt it would say... We should have had it, not you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of to their pregnant girlfriends or wives, whatever, let's
do it. All right, Colin, thanks very much. Halftime Heroes for the review of 2010. Remember, if you are going to the near post...
I'll get there first. There first, don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you third.